There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Life has changed almost overnight.
Yeah, you have a lot of questions. We are going to try to get you some answers. I'm Mike Simpson.
And I'm Charles Feldman. Together, we host Coronavirus Daily, a podcast designed to help us all get through this crisis together.
We go around the world and talk to some of the top experts out there. So think of this as a guide for you and your family. Multiple ways to listen: radio.com, the radio.com app, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher.
Remember, that's Coronavirus Daily.
To take this station with you wherever you go, download the radio.com app today and listen to this station and over 300 other stations. With the radio.com app, you can favorite your top stations for easy access and receive alerts with breaking news, contest opportunities, and more. To favorite a station, just click on the heart icon in the upper left-hand corner of your favorite station's logo. Go to your app store or radio.com/download and start listening today. Radio.com.
And now a game of Commercial Chicken, brought to you by Progressive, where we see how long Flo can go without talking about insurance. Ready? Go.
So, have you noticed how everyone's grammar is completely awful now? Like, you know, the texting and the LOLs. Whatever happened to punctuation? I mean, drivers who switch to Progressive can save big!
Okay, you win. We can't help but save customers money. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, this is Chicago's number one and most listened to sports station. Sports Radio 670 The Score, radio.com sports station, WSCR and HD Chicago, WBMX HD2 Chicago. The Score!
We have got a lot of stuff that we want to talk about today. We're going to kind of hit on a bunch of different sports and their plans to restart. Herbie, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Previously on The Lawrence Holmes Show.
He is a father. He is a husband. He is the editor-in-chief of Cubs Insider. He is Evan Hall. So I understood the context with which you were saying it, but what's got you miffed about the way that ownership and the amount of money that they're making or not making is being portrayed?
If you can't pay your players, you probably shouldn't be owning a professional sports team. And this kind of goes to the overall tenor of what we're seeing in Major League Baseball, which is the owners coming out and after, you know, multiple years of record-setting profits saying, oops, gosh, we're going to lose a lot of money. We're over-leveraged. We can't pay you guys. You need to take cuts because there won't be fans. Even though fan attendance has been decreasing over the last several years and making up a smaller portion of revenues, and yet revenues continue to set record highs every single year because of the other revenue streams these owners have. So I take issue with kind of where the league is coming in general with this matter, and I think that string of tweets was sort of an outcropping of that, more directly related to the Cubs in general.
Make me a bicycle, clown!
I think Evan Altman was actually on to something. It's a larger discussion, though, which I will get to at some point later on today. I'm glad that you're hanging out. My name is Lawrence Holmes, and I'm here with you until 2 o'clock. We got a lot of fun stuff planned. Mark Grody is going to join me at 1 o'clock. If you have not checked out his podcast, Let Me Put a List Together, it's really great. So I'm going to talk with Grody about that, throw some Bear stuff at him, by the way. We'll do that too. So I wanted to start with talking about baseball, and I ran across a piece from a guy who I really like. I've actually had Bill Shakin on the show before. The last time that I had Bill on the show, we were talking about the whole deal between Comcast and the Cubs and whether or not Marquee was going to find itself a home on Comcast. He's really good talking about baseball, whether it's on the field or in the boardroom. He writes for the LA Times, and he was nice enough to join me today on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline.
Alpamonte Ford has 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from at alpamonteford.com. And now Bill joins me here on The Score. Hey, Bill, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing all right, and I thank you for being available. You wrote a piece in the LA Times today about where things stand, and I enjoyed it because you kind of took the most prevalent questions and gave context to the answers of those questions. Why did you feel that that was an important thing to do for readers of the Times?
Well, because I think we've all heard for a couple of weeks now that baseball would like to come back, and there's potential target dates. Maybe July the 4th would have some great symbolic impact. I think people are hearing that the NBA now is getting set to come back in Orlando. The NHL, I believe this afternoon, is going to announce their plans to come back. So it's time. Either there's going to be a deal for baseball to come back and we're going to have a deal in short order, or we're not, and maybe we're not going to have a season. So wanted to let people know where things stood.
You made the case on this being an opportunity for MLB if they can do things quickly. What's that case?
Well, if you're going to have a season, you're going to have it competing against a lot of other sports. Everybody is trying to come back. So as we talked about, you know, the NBA would like to come back probably at the end of July. The NHL probably, maybe even a little bit sooner. But if baseball can come back in early July and sort of kick off the first major sport to return, you've got a window of opportunity where everybody is watching your product. In the past 2 years, not that many people have been watching your product relative to other sports and relative to other years. But if it takes longer to hammer out an agreement, you lose that window of opportunity, and you also lose a lot of money, and that's both sides. And that's going to be a situation that would last for years, because some of the money you would get this year that you might not get, well, maybe that triggers losses next year and for years to come. So it seems imperative for both sides to reach an agreement. It doesn't mean it's going to happen, but both sides certainly have powerful incentives to reach an agreement.
Bill, for the last couple of weeks, I've been chronicling with different reporters the animus between MLB players and the MLBPA and their commissioner, Rob Manfred, and ownership. You've covered baseball for a long time. Why is there so much animosity between the two sides?
I would say two things. Number one is, the Players Association had a huge and tragic setback a few years ago when, after a very powerful union had orchestrated transition to a guy named Mike Weiner, who was the last union executive director before Tony Clark. Weiner and Rob Manfred had a great relationship. Manfred was baseball's main negotiator before he became commissioner. And the two sides respected one another. They got deals done. There was not this kind of animus. And then, unfortunately, cancer took Mike's life. Tony Clark succeeded Mike, and Tony had a lot of success, of course, as a baseball player, but had spent his whole career being a labor lawyer. So all of a sudden, there was a transition to who's going to be the voice of the union, who's going to do the negotiating. And then they went to the negotiating table, and Rob Manfred cleaned the union's clock. And there's been a distrust between the parties ever since. Things the players thought were going to happen didn't happen. It actually goes both ways. And so when it comes to a situation like this where you say, okay, we need to make a deal, let's sit down, and you don't have that trust the way the NBA does with Adam Silver as commissioner and with the players union as almost partners, that's hard to bridge. I mean, the other thing is, for years, baseball players have successfully fought off a salary cap. So when you get to a point now that says, okay, how do we adjust salaries in the NBA and in the NFL and in the NHL, salaries are tied to revenues. The players get a percentage of revenues. So you don't have to renegotiate. If revenues go down, salaries go down. In baseball, that's not the case. And now, as we see, that's becoming a problematic negotiation.
Yeah, it seems as if we are going back to the days of figuring out the definition for is when it comes to baseball, right, and revenue. So for the person who's sitting there right now listening to us and going, revenue means money, right? How is it that the revenue can be creatively accounted for on both sides to kind of make it whatever people want it to be?
Well, let's take your beloved Chicago Cubs as an example. The Cubs, under current ownership, have been very successful in doing a lot of stuff with Wrigley Park. They raised some money from sales of minority ownerships. They took that money not only to make the team better, but took a lot of it to make the neighborhood better, to do development around the ballpark, put up, you know, restaurants, hotels. It's clearly a lot nicer than it was before current ownership got there. Now there's the Marquee Sports Network, and although there are no Cubs games to televise now, presumably there will be at some point. So when you talk about the Cubs revenue, what is that? Is that just the revenue from ticket sales, from beer sales? Should that count revenue from the hotel next to the ballpark? How do you account for Marquee's revenue? In the Dodgers case, for example, the Dodgers do not actually sell their TV rights. The owner set up another company to control their TV rights, and that company does a deal with the Dodgers. Well, how do you account for what's the Dodgers' revenue? Or in Chicago's case, what's the Cubs' revenue? And that makes revenue sharing really problematic.
Talking with Bill Shakin of the Los Angeles Times, he does a great job of covering baseball and some of the other things that go along with covering baseball. From the player's side, their argument has been, well, we took the haircut. We realized that we were going to get this, our salaries prorated by how many games we played in a season. Is that the end of the discussion, or is there more there that the owners can say, well, yeah, but?
There's more there, certainly from the owner's point of view. The owners believe that was premised on fans in the stands, and they can point to language in the contract that was reached in March that would back them up. The players certainly are pointing to the language that they believe backs them up. But the thing is, none of that language really comes into play unless you're defending the contract before an arbitrator or before a judge in a courtroom. And that, of course, would take months or years to resolve. The parties are trying to resolve this in a couple weeks. So they need to sit down and negotiate, and it doesn't really matter, honestly, what you think the contract says. Sit down, negotiate a deal, and play ball, or don't.
The reports are that the proposal should reach the players later on today. How confident are you that we can get to a good faith negotiation that ends up with baseball back on the diamond?
I think they can get there. One of the things you haven't seen a lot of in the last week or so is Rob Manfred, the commissioner, or Tony Clark, the union leader, talking publicly. That usually is a good sign, because public talks tend to mean the private talks have broken down. On the other hand, you, as mentioned, you haven't seen the financial proposal from the owners to the players. So there's been talk of a proposal coming for a couple weeks. We're told it's going to come today. We'll see. But, you know, if you really want to get up and running 2 to 3 weeks from now, as far as spring training, or I guess summer training, we'd call it now, you got to get going. And these are hard things to negotiate in a short period of time.
What things do you hope MLB learns from what's happening with the Chinese Professional Baseball League and the KBO?
Well, I don't mean to turn this into a political situation. The most effective thing that MLB could learn is that here's where you can respond as a baseball league, depending on how your country has responded to the virus. And the national response in South Korea and in Taiwan and in Japan has been better than the response in the United States. And we can argue about why that is, but the fact is Taiwan hasn't had a new case of the coronavirus reported in several weeks, and they're ready to open their ballparks to pretty much all comers without limits, probably next month. Now, it's not final, it's not official, but that's what's on the table. And that would be before MLB can open a ballpark to anybody without fans. So you can learn from their precautions, but you're going to have to take a lot closer look because the chances of an outbreak are much greater here since the virus is not even close to contained in America.
Do you think that it's a good sign that when it comes to the safety protocols, we're maybe a little farther along in those discussions between players and ownerships than the actual money, or is that a bad thing?
You need both, so I don't think it really matters which one you finalize first. Certainly everybody has a common interest in keeping everyone safe and healthy. So you're going to have to develop trust through both negotiations, one for health and one for financial reasons, and you need them both. So I don't think you get bonus points for which one comes first.
The last time that you were on the show, we talked about the Dodgers television deal and how bad it was for Dodgers fans for 7 years. There seems to be a little bit more clarity on that. I'd love for you to put on your other hat for a second, though, and talk about the Cubs and Marquee. This makes that negotiation with Comcast for Marquee vital, considering that there isn't really another there isn't the idea that the fan could at least go to Wrigley to watch the game. That the only way that they're probably going to be able to consume this is television and radio. What have you heard, if anything, on negotiations between Sinclair and Comcast?
Nothing specific, to be fair, but I think you have two very powerful and opposing narratives there. One is, as you mentioned, when baseball comes back, assuming it does, there's going to be pent-up interest. I mean, look at how many people were watching the Michael Jordan documentary, right? Or the fake golf match that Tiger Woods had over the weekend. So this is like actual live competitive sports. So yeah, there's going to be a lot of interest. On the other hand, what's happened over the past couple months with no sports has only accelerated the trend of people to say what we call cord cutting. I don't need cable. I don't need satellite, Hulu and Netflix services like that. I'm just fine with that. And so if you're in Comcast position, it's pretty tough because you're losing subscribers. The Cubs might help you keep the ones you have. They may not get you that many more. And if you do what the Cubs would like you to do, you're charging every customer of Comcast for broadcasts that probably 5% of the audience is going to watch, because very few people watch any one channel. That's why they do the bundles of dozens and hundreds of channels. So it's going to be an interesting negotiation, and we'll see where that goes. A lot of times when opening day comes, those deals aren't done because both sides want to see what happens to their business if they don't have the games on the air. And then we can figure out who's in a stronger position. So I don't know where that will lead in Chicago. I know in LA, the situation has been resolved a bit after 7 years, not because of anything the Dodgers did, but because AT&T, which is now the parent of DirecTV, wanted Dodger games to sell a streaming service it was sponsoring. And that just changed the scales. It had nothing to do with Major League Baseball or the Dodgers whatsoever. So sometimes it's a third party external force that provides a resolution as well.
Bill, I really appreciate your time and your expertise on this subject. I thought the piece today in the LA Times was great as far as breaking down what the major points are on both sides of the negotiation between ownership and the players. So thank you for spending a few minutes with Chicago and talking about it.
All right, take care.
That's Bill Chaiken of the Los Angeles Times. I like talking with that guy. He's pretty smart, and he seems to be plugged in with everything that's going on. There's a lot to digest, man. Like, there's a lot to digest when it comes to how this whole thing gets resolved, if it's going to be resolved. And the breaking news is that Gary Bettman is going to host a – I don't think it's – I'm hoping – I guess it wouldn't be a press conference. It would be a statement at 3:30 this afternoon. So the McNeil and Parkin show will have reaction to it. And we had talked a little bit yesterday about how the NHL is trying to get itself back, and they're